All right. Welcome to the Adam Stattmiller podcast. It's good to have you here today to kind of dive into some really interesting thoughts and things that have come up with different congregants in the church. And one of the things I love to do, this is Kent Porter, by the way, I'll tell you a little bit more about him, and he'll tell you about himself in just a second. But we have some really amazing people that are coming to La Jolla Christian Fellowship from all backgrounds, people in medicine field, people in sports, education, and particularly in business. And so Kent and I have talked, gotten to know each other, had a bunch of coffee, some scones together, and he just has some really interesting things, not only about business, coaching in business, but years of experience. So Kent, you've worked with, tell me some of the companies you work with.
I've worked with Qualcomm, I've worked with Disney, I've worked with L3, Honda.
Wow.
As well as smaller companies, startup companies that want to grow and companies that are stuck because they don't build a team underneath them. So
you're a team builder. You're someone who helps coach people who build teams, or what's your emphasis?
I guess the emphasis on people being real. When I first got in this business, I was shocked because the leader of the group would tell me a story, and I'd say, okay, right. Then what are you going to tell the team? And we'd change the story completely.
Right.
I'd say, you don't think the team understands what's going on? Right. You do that, and your credibility is going to go downhill. What shocked me was I had to give them permission to do the right thing. That really startled me.
Yeah, and you're big about communicating. We're gonna do a deep dive on that. This, if there was better communication in the workplace, if there was honesty in the workplace,
yes.
Then that's really gonna build a team. And then you love working with not just alpha leaders, but you like betas. You like people that are in the beta position and how to succeed.
Yes, they do it.
No one writes a book for employees.
That's what I wrote.
and I think, what is it, like probably 95% of the world is employees, right? We all, not everyone's the CEO, not everyone's the boss.
Yeah, and nor should they aspire to be.
Yeah.
They're not qualified, it's not a good fit for them.
Well, that's not what we're told.
Well, that's...
Everyone's got to be the leader, so you got a million leaders and no followers. We're all supposed to be the leader, right?
Well, and usually you're really inept at doing it, so you shouldn't be. And what you're reading are books that are philosophical, but they're not grassroots. My book is grassroots about what people should do and how they should treat each other.
And just real quick before we say it again at the end, what's your book called?
Fix Frustrations at Work. What I like about it is it's short stories. It takes you 6 minutes to read each story. There are 32 of them. Plus, it has an index and a reference guide.
Right.
What San Diego State used it for is kind of like a reference book.
Right.
Because you'll forget how to have a difficult conversation. Pull the book out, and there it is.
Right. So it's kind of like a little, like a devotional coaching talk. You can read it before work in the morning and kind of get going.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you had a story you wanted to start with, and it was about dishonesty. And there's a lot of that in the workplace.
Let me characterize it. I'm going to talk about a lie and a liar.
Okay.
That's my story.
Right on.
And guess who's a liar? The liar was me. It was total self-deception.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I was unmasked. So if you had asked me when I was a successful entrepreneur, I'm in 5 states, 28 cities, 110 employees, and we're minting the money. I'm rocking along. I've been invited to go to downtown Rotary, do a speech in entrepreneurship to 300 of the movers and shakers. Went out really well. So I'm on cloud nine.
Yeah, it's happening.
Okay, it's really good. So I'm rocking along. You said, Kent, what's important to you? I might have said God, because that was in the 70s. That's kind of what you did. You sort of tipped your hat to God.
Yeah.
Then I would have said family and friends and the business is last. That was the lie. And I lived that lie until I was exposed. I was exposed because I had the business for 14 years. The last 2 years, the business wound down. I closed the door and walked out. When I closed that door, I didn't realize what was happening. But the following morning, I had no place to go, no identity. I lost me. I remember walking on the shore's beach, and I had this vision. I was carrying this large glass vessel. My persona was in this large glass vessel, and I poured me out in the sand, and it disappeared. I had no income. I had no purpose, no reason for being. I had an identity crisis, panic attacks, and took medication.
Yeah, so this is something that's a big emphasis for me, especially – with the Western idea of purpose.
Right.
And you've heard me talk about it a lot at church, this idea that if you can find this center of God's will, this perfect purpose for your life, that you will find the utopian faith that you've always wanted. You will be fulfilled. You will have you might have struggles, but you're going to have happy days. And it's getting to the top of the mountain. And so I have found that with a lot of people, because I work with people like yourself who've been to the top of the mountain.
Right.
Like, a lot of people have never been there, nor do they have good relationships with people who have. And then the question is, when you're on the other side, you know, you're on the downside of the mountain.
Right.
So you're closing down your business. Why did it close down? Was it a financial failure? Was it a personal failure of your leadership? What was it? What happened?
I don't recall the exact numbers, but let's say that every month I had to make $30,000 to make payroll.
Ouch.
If I made $31,000, I got $1,000.
Right.
So I am really transactional. I've got to make payroll. Now, what I tried was with employees, they said, I want you to keep this check because it has my signature. My signature is going to be worth more than the check, so don't cash the check. That didn't work.
Get it, yeah.
So I was very transactional, and so my focus was right here in front of me. If I had raised my head and looked up, I would have seen a bullet coming right towards me, and I would have morphed the company. I would have changed us to a different kind of, because I saved money. I had a lot of money in the bank. So I had the opportunity.
So I tend to rabbit trail. So I want to come back to that original question of on the other side of the mountain, where that
right.
You're pouring out your identity. That's a beautiful image. And I think, you know, if we went and collected a box full of things that are our, you know, as a pastor, it's really easy to put your identity in,
right.
You know, who you are. But if we all did that, we all gathered up the little collection of things and we did that. I want to get back to that. You talked about a bullet coming. And so for the people that are listening, most of us don't see bullets. It's not like The Matrix. You know, have you seen The Matrix?
Yes.
The movie The Matrix, where the bullet is really slow. And actually, in The Matrix, he can go so slow where he can actually lean backwards. Not only does he have the ability to dodge the bullet, but everything slows down. One more thing is Wayne Gretzky said for him, when he was in the most crucial, critical moments, 1 second would seem like 3 seconds to him, which is a gift in sports. You have the ability to
right.
expand the moment. Why didn't you see the bullet? Why don't people see the bullet? Then I want to get back and not miss that other answer to that question.
Sure. I didn't see the bullet because I wasn't looking for it. I was too into my own stuff. I was too transactional.
And what do you mean by transactional?
Well, I had to make money.
Right.
I had to make payroll.
So it wasn't about values. It was about numbers.
Exactly. I mean, the value aspect of it was in the bushes, but it wasn't front and center at that point.
Right.
When I crashed and burned, the value, and that really surfaced and saved my life. Without that, I would probably still be a basket case. But right now, I really like me a lot.
Right.
It's my faith has seen me through having my gallbladder removed, having an endotectomy, right carotid artery through delusional stuff. So, because I think you say, well, what's your faith mean to you? Well, it means to me, it's survival. God came alongside of me. And let me tell you exactly how. I'm in this hospital. I'm in probably urgent care. Nurses all over the place. You have this little whiteboard. And they said, Kim,
right.
That's your whiteboard. What do you want? I said, God loves me and has a plan and a purpose for my life. And I don't know, Adam, the first night, I may have said that to myself. By the way, we believe our own voice.
Right.
So I said it out loud. I repeated it probably 100 times over and over. So it started getting me on the mend. What really sealed it for me, it was 2 a.m. I woke up. Nurse has her sign on me, Judy, large black woman. And she said, how you doing? I said, Judy, read that. She read it and said, oh, that's wonderful. I said, Judy, that's for you. God loves you.
Mm-hmm.
And has a plan and purpose for your life. She absolutely melted.
Right.
She said, you have no idea what's going on in my life and how much I needed to hear that.
Yeah. And so that idea, once again, this idea of purpose, which is really important, but I found that purpose, my purpose, I think, is to enjoy God and enjoy my life. I'm not looking for my job to be my purpose. I'm not looking, you know, for something, some destination that I have to get to. What have you experienced about this idea of purpose? Because you said your purpose became your identity, and I think those need to be extricated from each other.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you need to look at a higher level to start with. So one of my joys is to be able to come alongside God and God come alongside of me, and we move forward.
Right. Right. And that's something that one of the things I've been trying to do is just enjoy my life. And it's funny because because I was having panic and all kinds of stuff as well, and having to succeed and all these, trying to work out all my childhood stuff on the job, which I think a lot of us do.
Sure.
We're working out on the job. Once God healed me of that, and I got to the place where I was no longer deriving motivation from having to succeed.
Right.
You get out of bed for a lot different reason, and the fuel you burn is more of a contented fuel, but it's not addictive, if that makes sense. The fuel that I used to burn when everything was about proving myself, the big success, I used to tell my brother and I used to make a joke, only home runs, we're only home run hitters, no strikeouts, which is a bad way to set yourself up, because if you have a failure, you're just setting yourself up for a huge deal and a big fall, which actually happened. But this idea of finding a different type of fuel that was not addictive, but yet ultimately more joyful and peaceful.
Amen. Absolutely.
So that's been hard for me. So now, do you feel like the word I use is I'm more comfortable in my own skin, but I'm also living at a better rhythm and pace. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think if you ask my wife, because she's the fruit inspector.
right.
How has Kent changed? How has it fixed it? I'm mellow. I'm at peace. I still am impatient. I'm working on that one.
Yeah, I got that. I got that one too. Yeah.
So, that and the coming alongside of me. And what I really like a lot about God? But he loved me when I didn't even know him.
Yeah.
For me, if I spend quiet time with God, he is so creative.
Right.
I mean, I graduated from graduate school to my first job. I got my first job in 24 hours after graduating. That was God's idea how to do that.
Right.
I never would have figured that out.
Yeah. And then, so from getting your first job 24 hours out of graduate school to being on a beach with a box of a false identity.
Yeah.
A lot of ups and downs in between there.
Absolutely. But, of course, it was all molding me and shaping me, because my view is the only thing I'm going to take to heaven is my character.
Right.
And God is really interested in that. So he's been working overtime to build that character.
Absolutely. Moving now closer to what you do, and hopefully to give some people access to you if they want it, and some of your coaching. You love to help alphas, but your passion, like I said earlier, is for the collaborator.
Correct.
The collaborator, which is... It's a neat niche, because it's for people that are comfortable.
Right.
It's funny. I have a friend who's always saying, I feel like he talks about alpha a lot and the need to, be an alpha and the whole thing. And I feel like the Lord said to me, Jesus says I'm the alpha and the omega. And I don't think he values the alpha more than the omega. Right. And we tend to do that. That's a very Western thing,
very Western.
This hierarchy.
Yes.
Why do employees matter?
How about why do people matter?
Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough, yeah.
They're people, and they're in God's creation.
Okay.
And what I'm good at is seeing what people can become, not necessarily what they are. And I'm an encourager. That's one of my gifts. I love to talk to you.
So that's that transactional thing, but your answer directly to me was not a transactional answer, which is what I was looking for. Why do employees matter? Because they help a company do such and such. Your answer right there was because they're people. Which means that you're helping people find fulfillment no matter what they do. Can a garbage collector find fulfillment?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I mean, so what is he doing for the family? What is he doing for the community? What is he getting out of the way so people can function?
Right. Absolutely.
Let me give you an example. I worked with this individual. He said, I'm overwhelmed. And it's driving me crazy. I said, let me step back. The company's asked you to take on a cutting edge initiative. You're going to be the first one in the company to do this. That's where the company's morphing to. And he said, absolutely.
Right.
And I said, you're being paid to learn this. You have a scholarship to life. And he said, well,
right.
I don't look at it that way. I
right.
said, well, how about reframing it and look at it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of people don't look at education, because the entire education model is changing. It used to be to teach people how to think. Now it's regurgitating, information. And I think, education, where that's going is a whole another story.
Right.
But with that, talk to me about how you come alongside of people, especially this idea of communication.
Well, one of the keys to communication, in my mind, is very superficial.
Right.
Until you talk about the elephant in the room.
Right, which is?
It could be any issue in any family. It could be all kinds of issues. I mean, we could probably spend a lot of time on those. But you have to be, communication is being honest, being very direct, telling the person what you really think.
Right.
Not being passive aggressive, which is a standard hideout for a lot of people, is passive aggressive. It is when we were in the conference room and we were having a meeting with a bunch of people, and you challenged me in front of everybody.
Right.
What I would prefer, Adam, is the next time, let's talk about it before we go to the meeting. Let's see where we are, and let's see if we can come to a group. I will listen to you, but provided you will listen to me.
Yeah.
So I've told you what the behavior is I want to correct. I've told you how I want it corrected.
Right.
And then I say, are we in agreement? Can we go forward with this in mind?
So constantly this idea of communication.
But telling the truth in a way it can be heard. People want to spin it.
We don't like the truth.
It's very hard.
Yeah.
People don't want to be real.
So this idea of communication, what do you say to somebody? What if a boss or other employees don't want to communicate? What if that's not part of the culture? How do you?
And it happens. You're right. Boss, you're paying me a very, very nice salary. And I want to be productive, not only for myself, but for the rest of the company. My productivity is being inhibited. Let me share with you how. I like to know the why behind initiatives. I know it takes extra time, but I'm 70% of my level of productivity. I could be 110. So do you have 3 minutes and can you tell me what's going on? What's the reason? Why are we doing this?
Right, right.
So what I'm trying to do is make it in his best interest to help me help him.
Right. Now you told me at some point, I think when we were eating, you have to make a decision. Maybe it's time to change cultures.
That can happen. There are some cultures that are absolutely, will eat you alive. Culture will eat change alive.
Yeah. And that was a Drucker statement, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Each culture for breakfast every day.
It does.
Like that. Yeah. The other thing that you brought up is this idea of employees finding a comfortability with, and I guess employee is kind of a dirty word. You know, it feels like a dirty word these days, but you say it's not.
Well, I mean, I guess maybe I struggle.
Co-worker.
Yeah, colleague.
But I'm basically saying, you know, there's somebody has to lead and there's a subordinate. And that subordinate role is always seen as like, well, you're waiting until you can go to that next level. Is it possible people can just find a comfort there and enjoy their life?
I think I told you about Bev. Bev was working in my company. I tried to promote her 3 times. She said, you don't get it, Kent. I said, what did I get? So I live in the basement of my parents' apartment with my husband and 3 children because we can't afford it. You want to pay me more money? I don't want the responsibility. I'm really good at what I do. I love the culture. So please just let me be happy.
Right. and a lot of people, I think we think happiness is something that it isn't.
Right.
But being able to find joy in your workplace, do you talk a lot about joy? Do you talk about how do we do that?
Well, one of the questions I ask is, what is robbing you of your joy?
Okay.
Because that gets to the bedrock often of what the real issue is. And often it is jealousy, envy, pride. There are a lot of those things that come into play, and they need to wrestle with those in order to find. So your happiness is not in circumstances. It's inside. Your happiness is a person, not a thing.
Yeah, and so this idea of finding contentment away from having to be moving up the chain, moving up the ladder, if you were going to speak to, when you speak to people that are fixing their frustrations at work,
right?
Give me your top three. What are the 3 things that you coach people with on a regular basis?
First of all, so you're really frustrated with her. Absolutely. So what does she say when you tell her? Oh, Ken, I've never told her. So you're the problem. Well, how am I a problem?
Right.
Because she can't read your mind.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not good at it. I don't expect you to be good at it. But let me teach you how to do it.
And you actually told me you coach people on how to actually sit with their boss, another coworker, and how to do that. And you coach people through some of these situations.
And I use an acrostic, FAME. So what is your frame of mind about that person? So if you're in a negative frame of mind before you have a conversation, lose it.
That's a good point.
It's not enough. So if you're a -10, get to at least a +3. So you regard them as a human being. The next thing is, what's your attitude? Your attitude is, you're the problem, not them.
Right.
Okay. The next thing is, what's your motivation? If your motivation is for the welfare of both of them, then that's good. Then give them examples of the behavior that's not working, juxtaposition with the behavior that does work.
Right.
So they can see the before and after picture. And that clears things.
Yeah. And so it's frame? Is that
frame.
Frame. Okay. So that's one of the coaching that you talk about. Give me a couple more.
Well, one of them is, if people knew what their behavior was or how their behavior was impacting people, in other words, if they got honest feedback, then the second part may not even be necessary. Because if people are giving them honest feedback, they'll hopefully correct their behavior. So let's look at that. So how do you get honest feedback? Well, one of the ways you do it, let's say you and I are out at lunch and we both have salads and we're going back. You know I'm going to have a meeting with the boss. And I look over you and I say, Adam, if I had spinach on my tooth right here, would you tell me? And you say, yeah. I say, Adam, you've got spinach on your tooth.
Yeah, right.
So I can tell you that.
But some of that is creating a culture where you can be honest with people and people feel safe within that honesty.
Or with relationships. So I go to a colleague and I say, I want to make a deal with you. And the deal is, you give me feedback on how you see me impacting others, and I'll do the same for you. So we have reciprocity. And in 3M, three guys were hired at the same time years ago did this, and they all became vice presidents, and one of them became the president. Because they were getting this constant stream
right.
of corrective information.
So it's a team sport.
It should be. It's not often, but it should be.
Okay. Give me one more.
Be specific. So, Adam, I don't think I'm doing a good job communicating in the leadership team. Observe me and be a camera. So after the meeting, sir, run me a videotape of what you saw me doing. Don't lecture me yet. Just let me look and see if I can do a self-correction. I'll tell you what I'm going to do differently, and you tell me if you think it fits.
Right. And that's good. And one of the things I'm working at as a leader is I have a pretty good ability in church, for sure, to walk in, and if there's leaks, you put me in a church, in any church, in for a day. I walk around, look at your culture for a day, I can see all the leaks immediately. And I just want to fix leaks and move on. And sometimes that takes the personal growth out of the process. So I'll walk up to somebody and say, well, hey, we got to get this done, that's done, this fix, this thing. And what they hear is, I'm no good. Adam's upset with me. I'm not even putting that into the equation. I'm just thinking, there's a leak. Let's fix the leak so we can get to the next step. This is that transactional, you know what I mean, where you have to slow down, realize that every leak in the ship is an opportunity to build that team,
well,
that relationship.
And it's how you frame it. So if you say, Kent, you know.
Framing. I like that.
Well, it's the picture. You've got to give me the frame. Otherwise, it's just all over the place. So this is what you're. Do we have clarity on what your responsibilities are? Yeah, I think we do. Well, tell me what you think your responsibilities are, okay? So then I will assume that you will see this and you see that. I won't be coming to you because you're going to catch it before I catch it.
Right. So I love this because the other day I had someone whose feelings were hurt because it was framing. Which I never do. I framed it in a text. And it was four quick points that was nothing about character. It was nothing about heart. It was nothing about values. It was all about the length of a certain event. It was like, how much time we spend doing this? Do we have enough, workshops or whatever? It was all like stuff. I mean, it was nothing about anything heart. But it was because it was in a text and because it came on the wrong day for them. And I actually said, let's have a discussion, and I want to have a discussion. They said, well, what about? And then I took that bait, because everyone wants to know, and I just wrote a quick text. And then when I got back was, hey, that was really hurtful, and the whole deal. And I'm like, why is part of me is thinking, why me telling you that we need to be shorter is hurtful.
Right.
But it was framing. I framed it in a text. Had we gone out to lunch, had we said, hey, here's my success, because you know my heart for it, and the whole deal, and that framing is a big deal.
Well, it's huge. It changes the way you. I mean, I'm carrying garbage out for the 15th time in the same day, and
right.
I'm mumbling. And God says to me, "Don't do it for Jill. Do it for me." Oh, Lord,
right.
Slam dunk. You got it.
Right. And then even working with my daughter's homework, the framing is so important as we battle to make sure that we're getting all the assignments done and everything. And sometimes I just get, you know, I can be frustrated and constantly, you know, I think that's kind of a Noah principle. You know, you're framing, you got to frame up the ark before you put it on the water.
Well, that's an interesting point of view. Yeah. But there's the other aspect. It's I don't care to know what it is you know until I know you care.
Yeah, that's right. That's definitely true. And I feel like, you know, personally in my leadership, I hope that people know you'll take a bullet for them. And there's a lot of people that have come to me and says wounds from a friend can be trusted. Now, you don't want to go around constantly trying that out. You know what I'm saying?
No.
But I know there's a lot of people who I've disagreed with in the past, who I don't always like their opinions. We probably wouldn't be on my top five road trip team, you know what I mean, that you'd want to go on a road trip with. But I know they take a bullet for me.
Sure.
And when they come to me, I listen to them because I think if it was them, you know, I disagree 50% of the time with you or whatever it is, but ultimately I know they care. And teaching people how to care, that's a hard issue. Hey, how do I get people in touch with Kent Porter coaching?
Sure. I mean, you go to my website, fixfrustration.com. It'll have a lot of information. You can sample the book. You can sample some of the techniques and some of the key things that I've learned over the years. One huge thing you'll get off the website is how to delegate. You think you know how to delegate because you're in a position where you can't. You're clueless.
Right.
It's like you being a parent. You think you're a good parent because you have a child. No, you don't. No, you aren't.
Yeah, right.
So there's an 8-step process for how to delegate. Most people blow by.
And you coach individuals, you coach in groups, do you monthly calls, traditional way?
I coach individuals and groups. It's weekly calls, the monthly calls, engagement are months to years, depends on the individual. One individual I've been coaching for 13 years, and he's also, his company is now worth $100 million. So that makes me feel good.
Keep him on the hook.
So I coach teams as well as individuals.
Okay.
The teams I like a lot because I can be coaching you an individual, but are you implemented?
Right.
If I'm coaching the rest of the team, I will hear how well you're doing.
Right.
And I have a way of framing it so you don't know where I heard it, but I'll ask you questions that are very pointed in order to get you to think about what you're doing.
Absolutely. Well, we'll do this again. We'll move into the faith component at work, which I'd like to do, but these are some really practical tools, I think. Helpful for me. I love that bit about the framing.
Yeah.
I've always, the honesty has been good. The seeing a bullet and being aware of kind of slowing down the conversations, the specificity, be specific.
Yes.
Really good stuff. I mean, just this conversation alone has been really helpful for me. So, Kent, thanks for coming in. Go for a fist bump. And this is AdamStatmiller.com podcast. You're probably going to be able to find this on Kent Porter at fixfrustration.com. Check that out, and Kent has a ton of wisdom and love to see you use him in his coaching. All right, thanks a lot, Kent. Bye-bye.